This is an ABC podcast.
This is The Conversation Hour with Jonathan Kendall.
And I'm without Rochelle Hunt today. She's away for the next fortnight, having a bit of well-earned time off. And I don't know about you, but can you remember learning to read? I can remember little bits of it. Like I remember choosing Grug books from the school library that were put in this kind of hardcover, what was a hardback cover with a bit of elastic on the inside. And then we'd take those books home and then I'd read them to my parents. And I also remember the first full book that I read by myself, Fantastic Mr. Fox by Roald Dahl. And I remember that sense of satisfaction I had after I finished it because I felt like I'd joined the adult world. And it also meant that mum and dad couldn't spell things out, relating to Christmas presents and things like that, because I knew what they were talking about. It is just so important, though, not just for figuring out what you're getting for Christmas. It's one of the most important skills taught in schools is reading. And it's a huge factor in whether kids enjoy their time at school or not. But figures from the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, so the OECD, show that one in five Australians have low literacy and or numeracy skills. So what's the problem here? And what's the best way to teach someone to read? Because 2 weeks ago, we spoke about the maths curriculum changing to focus more on creating adaptable learners rather than a really big emphasis on things like times tables. And they delayed teaching times tables for about a year as part of that draft national curriculum. And this is an area that is being passionately debated at the moment, as you will hear this morning. There have been some tense conversations around learning to read and even friends lost over the best ways to teach kids to read. Some say it's all about balanced literacy, which includes asking kids to look at the pictures in a book and kind of guess what's happening. Others favour systematic synthetic phonics, which emphasises learning the sounds that letters make so that the learner can understand and decode words. Now, if you're a student, if you're an adult learning to read, or maybe learning English as a second language, what's the best way to read? How were you taught about reading and did it work for you? And should the way reading is taught in schools be changed?
On ABC Radio, this is The Conversation Hour with Jonathan Kendall.
Each letter of the alphabet represents sounds in words, and this relationship between letter symbols and their sounds is known as phonics. Let's look further now at the word coat. K-O-T. We would say that the word coat, when broken down using phonics, has three phonemes. K is one, O is two, and T is three.
So that just sums up, well, it's a little bit of a taste of what systematic synthetic phonics is all about. And that's something that Toni Seiler is really passionate about. She's a speech therapist who did her PhD on effective interventions for kids who are struggling with their reading. Good morning.
Oh, good morning.
Why are you so passionate about phonics?
Well, everything is a bit of a story, but as a speech pathologist working within schools, actually I've been a speech pathologist for 48 years or something, I saw so many children, particularly on my caseload, with language and speech problems who were having troubles reading, and I could sense that the way they were taught was not working for them. So that led to my interest. Yep.
And can you give us a bit of a feel for the discussion here? Now, I don't necessarily want to use this term, but it's been described as the reading wars. Mm-hmm. And I'm not really comfortable with that. But why is there so much debate and discussion and disagreement around the best way to teach kids to read?
Yeah. Yep. Look, the first thing I'd like to say is I go into many classrooms and I see every teacher is thoroughly interested in their children learning to read. And so I think that the way things should be done is conversations around what we now know about reading. And I think the best way to perhaps understand it is just a really quick historical view of things. So back in the 60s, a person called Goodman did some observations of skilled readers, and he theorized that the way they learnt to read was a psycholinguistic guessing game, that they looked at the, they thought about the context and they looked at, the sentence structure and guessed the words a lot. And that did lead to, okay, if that's the way skilled readers are learning to read, then maybe we should teach those cues. So that kind of led to something called the three cueing system. But in the 70s, then a lot of other scientific procedures were used to work out. So if you wanted to find out something important, you would say, what is it? What's involved? And how do I teach it? And that's what the science has addressed. I can say more about that?
Well, I'm interested in that, but I'm also interested in why there seems to be such passionate views for phonics or for balanced literacy. What is that? Why?
Mm. Look, possibly I think that if you're a teacher in a classroom, what you actually see is that most of the kids probably do learn to read okay because they actually don't have a problem. I work with the children and we know that there are about 30 or so percent of children who struggle. And so, you know, the experience of most teachers is that it seems to work okay. And I have been in classrooms in the last like 2 weeks, and I do see, even though it might be a classroom that teaches phonics and I'm doing inverted commas in the air, I see a child trying to read and I hear, read to the end of the sentence. What do you think it means? What's the first letter? And what the science has shown is that, first of all, to be a proficient reader, we need to have lots of words we can automatically read. And the science has shown that the best way to achieve that is to have decoded the words. That's almost irrefutable now.
Yep. Lots of texts on this coming through. We just played that little bit of audio about phonics, and this text says, homeschooling flashbacks, no. And another text saying, fantastic, Mr. Fox was my first book as well. I loved it so much. The school librarian gave me a copy. Yeah, it's an absolute ripper. But there's another text here saying, why are we talking to a speech pathologist instead of a teacher?
That's a great question, isn't it? Well, as I said, as a speech pathologist, you are working with children whose language areas are weak, and then you see that they always end up with literacy or reading difficulties. Now, think about language. What the science has shown is, the first question is, well, what is reading? And what they've shown is that there are two main skill areas we need to read. First of all, we need to be able to accurately read the words. And by accurately, I mean skilled readers can read a word automatically without context. That's the first thing. The second big skill area you need is oral language. So having read the word, you obviously need to know the meaning of the word. Now, that is called the simple view of reading, and a lot of people will know it as a graphic called the reading rope analogy. But the main thing is, they do need to be able to accurately read words, and they need the oral language. So that's why a speech pathologist is involved, because of that big oral language component.
Well, let's have a chat with John, who is in Oakley now. Morning, John.
Good morning, Jonathan. How are you doing?
Very well. How did you learn to read?
Well, back in the early 80s, so I was, I suppose, in 1980, 1981, I was in grade one, and really we were just like dumped in a classroom with a whole bunch of other kids and our grade one teacher, and we kind of just got on. You know, there wasn't really any much support back then, and I was in a private school as well, and you kind of just picked it up and adapted and kind of just, you know, you just learned to read. And if some kids got left behind, then, you know, there wasn't really any emphasis put on those children because there probably wasn't the support back in the 80s. And
so it sounds like you just taught yourself to read, John.
Yeah, well, did. And I think the deficit for me was the very first book that I learned to read was like the film adaptation of Return of the Jedi. So, and that was very later on in my years, you know, so probably 7 or 8. And I suppose when I look back at my own experience teaching my child to read, now I read her a book a night ever since she was really born, and I'm still doing it now. She's 6 years of age, and you know, she's been able to read, you know, at a really high level probably since she was 3. And, you know, we're just doing the father-daughter thing each night, just, you know, making sure that I still read and we still have that contact with each other. But she's quite capable of reading now. And I think the last thing I'd say is, like, my daughter is at a fantastic school here in Oakley. And I think the thing that disappoints me a little bit is the books that she's bringing home to read. And this the format of her doing so is very similar to what you described when, you know, you get they get given a book, they bring it home and they read it. But the level of that, of her reading, of the books that she's bringing home is very, very basic. So that either tells me that there's not enough books for her level at her school, or she's maybe a little bit too advanced, and that's probably on us, or, you know, the overall level of reading in that classroom is something else. And, so that's, I suppose, just talking a little bit about my experience.
Yeah, and you've brought up some really interesting points there, which I want to ask you about, Tony Seiler. The first one is access to programs and maybe learning differences, or the differences in the way that reading is taught in the cities versus the country. Is there any difference, or is there a, you know, just a blanket approach?
From what I can see is that in the last 5 to 10 years, there's been a lot more knowledge being spread around about the science of reading, I suppose, or how best to teach children in a way so that all children learn, so that nobody misses the boat.
But there's a degree of it depends on the teacher, doesn't it? I mean, if the teacher wants to teach literacy in a particular way, that's kind of how they have an input, don't they?
Yes, and look, I think the other thing is that the Australian curriculum sometimes, and I think later when we talk to Sarah, who's here, who's a teacher in the schools, the curriculum, I have looked at it, it's hard to find specifically described ways to teach systematic synthetic phonics, but there's a lot of work being done to make sure that the curriculum is explicit for teachers. So I think sometimes that interpretation might be an issue.
Yeah, and we will have a chat later about that. But the other thing that was brought up in that last call was just surrounding your house in books. And I think some people feel like, and there's Facebook comments saying that was, you know, the best way to teach your kid to read is just have heaps of books in the house and just kind of let them go at it.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
And again, as a speech pathologist, I end up with lots of children on my caseload who come from families who have read to their children from an early age. That doesn't necessarily, if the child is going, if there's say reading difficulties within their genetic makeup, then they may have issues. So that doesn't immunise the child against having reading difficulties. It's wonderful for their oral language, which is the main a big component, but the word reading part of learning to read does have to be systematically taught for a lot of children, not for all children.
Yeah. Kate is in Preston. A very warm good morning to you, Kate. What's your point?
Oh, I have so many things to say, but I'll try and keep it brief. My daughter, who's now 20, is dyslexic, and we were very much one of those households full of books. I love books. I read to both my children, but she just could not grasp how to read, and it was a source of huge frustration and pain and conflict right through primary school. And phonics, I was a big advocate for phonics. Phonics just didn't work for her. She just didn't get it. There's something where she can't process the sounds, or she still confuses E and I, E and I, even now at 20. So that didn't work, and we tried everything. We threw the kitchen sink at it because I'm actually an author, so it was really kind of important to me that she should learn to read and not miss out on the joy of reading. And I think that's a big part of it too, is I think kids need to be really motivated to read. And I think what your earlier caller said about the readers that are supplied are so dull and so boring. But, you know, kids don't see reading as something that you can do for pleasure. And I think kids don't get read to enough in the classroom either. I think they're not exposed to the joy of stories. Anyway, that's another whole topic. But, yeah, phonics didn't work for her. And what eventually worked for my daughter was that she was a great listener to audiobooks and a great listener to me reading to her. And it was, she heard Harry Potter so many times, and finally, I think at about the age of 11, she grabbed the book and she read it herself.
So that's really important too, because we've had comments this morning on the text line saying it's so important that you have an engaged reader. If you've got people reading about something they're really interested in, that helps a lot. But Kate, let's put that to Tony Seiler. Why do you think phonics didn't work for Kate's daughter?
Kate, I'm very glad that you've brought that up now. This is the other thing that I guess scientific research has discovered to explain why some children with dyslexia will take a lot longer. There are other foundation skills that are sometimes, well, they're not able to be taught, actually. So first, the child needs to have good phonemic awareness. You can teach that. They need to be able to hold sounds in short-term memory, phonological memory. That's not teachable, but is often there in children with dyslexia. And the other issue is that sometimes they have problems rapidly retrieving information, rapid naming. So children with dyslexia may will most likely have those issues, which means that phonics will work, but it takes a lot longer, and that's why there's a reason for it.
Mm. Is it also a case of starting with phonics? If you kind of start from a balanced literacy point of view and then do phonics later, are there problems with that?
Yeah. So if you start,
If you start with balanced literacy in a school, and then you come to phonics when the child might be starting high school, I mean, is that too late to start?
Okay, actually, there's been a study on that. They actually did that in Scotland. There was a study with 300 kids where they taught one group systematic synthetic phonics, another group analytic phonics, and another group analytic with phonemic awareness. The systematic synthetic phonics, when they got it from the start, were well in advance of the other children. And even 7 years later, they were 3 years ahead. So, yes, starting with systematic synthetic phonics is going to mean you'll be effective for most children. There is always going to be about 3 to 6% of kids with these other difficulties who will fall into the category of being dyslexic, and they will need very intensive intervention and it will take them longer. That's quite correct.
Louisa is on the line from South Gippsland. Good morning, Louisa. Now, you teach adults to read, is that right?
I do. I'm actually an adult literacy teacher.
Okay, tell us about that.
I just mentioned to your producer, coming off the back of lots of these conversations about parents ringing in, I work in the field of supporting people with low levels of literacy, how they can best support their own children to learn to read. A lot of the strategies that your early callers have mentioned come from having that capacity themselves already, the idea of a house full of books or trying different things. We work on explaining some of the wonderful science behind it you've been talking about today, trying to assist parents to improve their own literacy, but then actually give them some skills. So when the school says, here's a home reader, you're not sort of taking bad habits or preconceptions with you to help your kids.
Mm. And so what's your experience? With phonics, has that been successful for you, systematic synthetic phonics? Have you looked at that?
For adults?
Yeah.
Yes. I think a lot with adults, you really do have to go back to basics. If there's a lifetime of resistance there, sometimes some of that decoding that you can help people to understand and really break words down, break sentences down and so on, just starts to upskill them. It's much, much harder for adults, obviously, than it is for children to relearn.
Yeah, well, talking about brain plasticity as we were the other day, I think that's part of it. It's easier to, children just soak things up like sponges, don't they, Louisa?
That's right. It's much harder for adults. So we have to really think outside the box to give people a purpose.
Good on you, Louisa. Thank you for having a chat with us, Louisa from South Gippsland. Whether you're a student, you might be an adult learner, or maybe, as Louisa is, you're teaching people to read. You might be learning English as a second language. including this one that says, my middle child didn't link sounds and symbols. An amazing speech pathologist taught him to decipher words using Lego bricks. My eldest daughter, who witnessed what her sibling went through, was inspired to become a speech pathologist when she grew up. So there you go, Tony. There's one for the speeches. Let's have a chat now with Joe Padgham, who is one of the co-conveners of the Foundation of Literacy and Learning and a former school principal based in Canberra. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Jono.
When it comes to the science, is this all done with? I mean, the science is in favour of phonics, isn't it?
Well, I think, can I just clarify a misconception that I heard when your producer brought me in? Balanced literacy is not without teaching phonics. I think that's you were saying that you did balanced literacy, then you did phonics. That's a misunderstanding of the terms, and I think that's probably one of the things that we all.
I was asking a question. Yeah, I was asking a question that if you learn balanced, or if you're a part of a school that does balanced literacy, and then, you know, when you start high school, if there's an emphasis on systematic synthetic phonics, whether that works or not. But, yeah. But so. I understand there is an element of balanced literacy that is phonics, but yes. Do you think there should be more phonics included instead of, you know, having stretchy snake, which is the, you know, the little technique to use to get kids to stretch out words, or eagle eyes is the other one, to look at the pictures to understand the words? So
I don't necessarily think they're super effective. They're little tricks. Look, the concept of balanced literacy was put forward to remind teachers that there was no one dimension of the reading process that you should privilege when you're teaching children to read. Children need to receive instruction in all the different components of reading. And I heard a little bit from your speech pathologist then, and she's talking about those children with the who experience the, you know, the greater challenges. So what we really need is our teachers to have great depths of knowledge about all of these dimensions in the reading process, and they need to have great depth of knowledge about how each of their children that they're working with, you know, how they're learning, what they already know, and then apply whether they need you know, something that's got a stronger phonic approach, or whether it's something that you go back and build their phonemic awareness. So it's actually about knowing your children really, really well, and then with your knowledge, working out what it is that child needs and what they need to do next.
Can I just put that to Tony Seiler? Do you think that, Tony, that we need to kind of tailor the way we teach kids to each individual child?
I think the thought that I had in listening to that, that I'd like to wonder about, is within balanced literacy, those practices of getting cues from the text and almost guessing the word, that's indirect. It's almost the opposite of what you're trying to do if you're trying to get the child to decode the word, so that you've got, and if the materials that are used within balanced literacy don't allow the child to use their decoding, then you may be teaching them to decode and then giving them books to read that they have no way of being able to decode. So it's... I guess it's giving them mixed messages, which means that the child will be confused.
What do you reckon, Joe? Do you have confused children?
I've been working with children and teachers and school leaders for 43 years, and I do know that when you have teachers that have the greatest level of knowledge, they bring that judgment to what happens for that child to make sure there isn't any confusion.
Hmm. Yeah, and... Will I say? What my observations have been within schools is that sometimes, often, it can be the second year before it becomes quite obvious that the child is struggling. You can get a lot of children, I'm thinking of some wonderful little girls in particular, who can just hold it in there and look as if they're reading, because what they're actually doing is they're memorising a whole lot of words. They're actually not decoding. And then by the time it's year 3, 4, then their weakness is becomes quite obvious, and then we need to go back in and provide intervention. So the science is showing that in order to get automatic recognition of words, that happens most efficiently if we have sounded it out, because it lays down a clear mental image of that word. And if that's done from the start for all children, we're going to have fewer children that will struggle in later on in year 3 and 4.
I think what we need to make sure is that we're not setting up this paradigm of, you know, the binary approach. You've got to do, it's either this or that. The really skilled teacher can do what that child needs, and so what we need to do is to support our teachers and to build their knowledge, to give them the time so that they can assess, so that Tony was saying, that we don't get children in year 3, 4 who have been masking that. So teachers need to be able to really diagnose, have the right assessments, watch, look at the reading behaviours that children are showing, and then see how they can take the explicit teaching to the next level. I guess the biggest thing that I'd like to say is that we don't need a program for that. We actually just need highly skilled teachers, and we need to keep supporting our teachers to have ongoing professional learning and time. And when there are the more challenging, children's reading behaviours being presented, that they can work collaboratively with other experts, and that can include speech pathologists and others, to actually work out what is it that this child needs now.
Mm. Good on you, Joe. Thank you so much for having a chat with us this morning. Joe Padgham, one of the co-conveners of the Foundation of Literacy and Learning and a former school principal based in Canberra, talking about why she thinks no two children are the same, and that we can tailor the way we teach reading to each child.
On ABC Radio, this is The Conversation Hour with Jonathan Kendall.
And today it's all about reading and what is the best way to teach someone to read. Lots of different thoughts on that this morning on the text line. This says, great discussion about reading. Thank you. My husband and I are huge readers and have a library of books at home. We've read to our son since day one. He hasn't had difficulty with reading, but he just isn't interested in books like we are. It's very hard to get him to pick up a book. And that comes down to what was being said before about, if he's got something he's passionate about, maybe he can pick that up. Sonia says, hi, Jonathan. Learning to read can often be adversely affected by reduced eye tracking skills. This fine motor milestone is more common in settings of reduced gross motor skills and other milestone delays. It sounds like Sonia's been doing some work into that. Thank you for that. Jackie is in Frankston South. Good morning, Jackie. What's your position on this?
Oh, good morning. Look, I'm very much with what Joe was saying just before, that we really need, I don't mind the balanced literacy. I think it's very good. I don't know enough, I think, about the interpretive systematic phonics. But I believe that if we have that balance of both phonics, which is very, very important, I really believe it's very important, we throw kids into looking at books and they're looking at the pictures and they're trying to figure out what it is we're thinking of or what they're thinking of. They really need a language-rich classroom where there's words everywhere, where there's sounds everywhere. You know, when you're looking at reading, you're looking at reading, writing and phonics. You're looking at all three of them. And I think there are so many wonderful programs out there. However, it's a very time-sensitive thing. I was overseas. I was a principal in an international school overseas for a few years. And when I came back, I decided to go back in and do a bit of emergency teaching. And everything just seems so rigid when it comes to that timetable. Everything's so time-sensitive. They put a clock on that says to you, the kids, you know, you've got 30 seconds left, and once that bell goes off, then everything stops.
Don't you have to be like that, though, because there's just so much to fit into the curriculum these days. And, if I had a dollar for every time someone said, oh, we need to get that into the school curriculum, don't you have to kind of divvy up your time that way?
That's the problem. The curriculum is just getting broader and broader, and there's no depth in it. And, you know, we throw things in there and the teachers turn around and say, well, where am I going to do this? Mm. You know, individual times with children are just wonderful, and that's what you desperately need. But teachers need an assistant in their classroom too, I think, to help with them. Yeah. And they need to get that time to say, okay, I'm going to have 20 minutes on phonics, and then the reading class will be 40 minutes, and then writing now, WOW writing or whatever it's going to be, we'll give that an hour.
Yeah, it is. It's a crowded curriculum. Thank you so much, Jackie, for calling through. Michael is in Torquay. Good morning, Michael.
Oh, good morning. Hang on.
Good. What's been your experience?
Oh, my goodness. What has been my experience? So, listen, I am a 53-year-old dyslexic who's married to a literacy specialist. And so language is discussed quite a bit within our household. And there's so many things. So first and foremost, to all the dyslexics and to the dyslexic parents, most importantly, ultimately recognize that your child is dyslexic and celebrate the fact that your child will be a phenomenal individual and has an amazing superpower within their dyslexia. Reading is a tough thing to do when you're dyslexic. And so just know that out there for the greater community, that your kid will eventually succeed in all manner of things. Just give them the opportunity, and reading may not be their strong suit. You'll eventually get past it. It's okay. Now, as for like phonics and stuff, phonics is such a huge barrier to somebody who's like myself, who is so busy trying to figure out how to decode the word and to sound it out, they've completely forgotten what the two words, the word before that they just read. So the sentence makes absolutely no sense. And to the point of it having a teacher have a toolbox of ideas and how to go about teaching a kid to read, that I think is so crucial. I feel like schools tend to really get bogged down in the latest data says. That's like their favorite phrase. And so mm-hmm. The next year you come to school and they throw everything out and they go, right, now we're going to do whole language. And they throw all of that out. Now we're doing phonics. And they throw all of that out because they're trying to be whatever it is in the eyes of the community. They're trying to be out in front and show that they're the latest and greatest, when in reality, you need all of those tools. And you need to have, as the nice lady was saying, you need to have a multitude of tools in your toolbox so that you can address the children in their own way. Because not all kids, obviously, we know this, don't all learn the same. So, man, learning to read is, you know, eventually everybody will get it. But specifically for the dyslexic kid out there, it's not the end of the world. Don't let it struggle. Don't let it pull you down, and realize that you are an amazing individual and your dyslexia is actually a gift.
That's a really good point there. But just, that's your spiel. I'm done now. I'm going to drop the mic, says Michael. No, just before you go, though, what worked for you? What actually helped you to learn to read?
So literally, I did all of the above. And I think that you, am I a great reader now? No, not really. I'm sure you've seen those things on Facebook. It says, you know, hey, can you read this? And they've taken some paragraph and they've rearranged all the letters, and the first and the last letter are the only thing that actually makes sense. Have you run across those on any of the sort of, you know, it's one of those sort of those paragraphs out there that it says, if you can read this, you're brilliant. And what they've done is they've simply removed all the letters. But if you read it, it makes sense, because we learn to understand language from the letters that are within the thing. You don't actually have to learn to sound things out. I think that proves that the idea of understanding and learning language in and of itself to become a better just understanding how language actually works within even like storytelling and those sorts of things. I was, again, horrible reader, horrible speller, can't do any of those, but man, am I a good listener. I can tell you stories, I can tell you the colors of things, I can tell you, it's like a movie that runs in my head, but I can't read it.
And you're very passionate about learning to read as well, Michael, and I can hear that in your voice. Thank you for calling through. Michael lives with dyslexia and said it was kind of a mix of approaches for him that helped him learn to read. Let's have a chat to a teacher now, and that is Sarah Johnston. She's a teacher at Guthridge Primary School in Sale, and she's kind of come full circle on this because, Sarah, you started out doing reading recovery, which is, well, that's a balanced literacy type of thing, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Even before that, John, I started out as a whole language teacher.
Which was kind of the precursor to
absolutely. Classrooms full of rich literature, which my classroom is still absolutely full of rich literature. Our approach to phonics was embedded. So we stumbled upon interesting letters and sounds and as we were reading a rich book, and we pulled them out and featured them for a little while, but didn't focus on them, didn't build them back into any of our other learning. Then I was fortunate enough to train as a reading recovery teacher, and I am still thrilled that I had that opportunity. I have synthesised so much of my learning from that time into my current beliefs and practices around the teaching of reading. I learnt a lot of theories, and I had a lot of experience with children as I watched them learn to read. Something curious with the reading recovery approach and the analytic approach, we started with a whole word and then we broke down and looked for the parts within that whole word, was that children did incredibly well on that program. We had low-skilled children who made rapid progress. They caught up with the average in the classroom, within a grade one classroom. By the time they hit grade three, they started to fall behind again.
Oh, okay. What they so it's kind of a false start. Hadn't
stuck.
Right, right.
And it's something I've noticed so much in schools across my 30 years is that children can do well in their foundation years, their year one, year two. They hit year three and year four and they start to fall back or just plateau. And I've been so curious about this for a long time. And as I've become involved in the systematic synthetic phonics, I've started to understand why this is. The analytic phonics taught the children to guess and to predict, to think about context in the words they were reading and what would make sense and what sounded right. But as the words become more complex, as they become multi-syllable words, as the context is more foreign and they're learning in areas they don't have the rich background knowledge, they no longer have the word breaking skills and the code to enable them to solve those words.
Yeah, and we've heard that this morning on the talkback line, people saying, well, Mikey just memorizes the book, you know, they'll have camera words, you know, certain pronouns that they've just memorized, and so they can recognize those ones, but they don't actually realize how each symbol makes a sound. So is that what you're coming up against at, you know, grade three or four?
Yes, yeah. Yes. And we're noticing the difference now. At Guthridge, we've had a very strong systematic synthetic phonic approach for 3 years now, and we can see the strength in our children over those 3 years. So a child in foundation who, and they still have access to so many rich books. They do read decodable texts as part of learning the skill, and they understand.
And just quickly explain what a decodable text is.
Yeah, sure. So a decodable text, the words have been written very carefully with only the letter patterns that the children knows at that level of learning.
Yeah, so sit, you know, if you know S, I and T, it might be sit, pit, sips, you know, that sort of thing.
Yes, and yep. Fortunately now publishers are producing beautiful decodable texts. Going back 15 years ago, they were dreadful. You wouldn't want to let a child, someone who loves literature as much as I love literature, wouldn't want to let a child near one of those books. When publishers are now producing an array of really lovely books too that are built with those reduced levels. So our children spend 10 to 15 minutes reading those books and they know they are practicing their reading skills. Then they have access to all of the other books in the classroom libraries, and we fill our classrooms with thousands of beautiful stories. And I had a child say to me the other day in foundation, so he's only been at school for 20 weeks, say to me when I was in the classroom coaching, Mrs. Johnston, does OU say ow or? And I thought, wow, what a question coming from such a young child. And I said, why do you ask? And she said, I'm trying to figure out if this word is house or horse.
Oh.
And so she could see in the picture there was a house or a horse. In the past, in an analytic system, the child would have guessed that. They were taught to look at the start and the end of the word. They would have seen the and this, and that child would have guessed either house or horse and kept going. And in this sentence, either would have made sense. So the child would not have known if they're incorrect. And I saw that so many times as a reading and recovery teacher, and I wasn't quite sure how to ameliorate that problem. This child now knows, though, that letter patterns make sounds. So she knew that to solve that word, and there were two options it could possibly be, she needed to know what sounds OU said. So as soon as I said OU says ow, oh, so the word's house. And she could look through the word and then check that she was correct and keep going. So her meaning didn't change as she went through the rest of the book because she was wrong and said horse instead of house.
Well, that's a really interesting anecdote. So for you, who seems like they've kind of come full circle, Is that the crux when it all boils down to it? Is that why you're now dedicated to systematic synthetic phonics?
Absolutely. And it is, as Tony was saying earlier, it's for those children who don't automatically get it. And I've seen with my own children, some just automatically get the reading process. Others actually need to be specifically taught the code that builds up. And if we've taught the code within the first 3 years of school, so by the end of grade two, the child knows that entire code, we can then move into the analytic phonics. So we start looking, and one of my spelling groups at the moment looks at the analytic side of things. We look at word meanings and word origins, and it's absolutely fascinating. They can do that because they have the entire code. They understand how words work in a way they didn't when they were just guessing. The children who learn to guess, they find it so much harder to go back and to be taught phonics later on.
Tony Seiler is still with us, a speech therapist who's done her PhD on effective interventions for kids who are struggling with their reading. If you're learning to read at two, that's kind of the opposite. But do we really need to be, you know, pushing our kids to learn to read at two?
Well, actually, again, I always go back to what do we know from science. And a woman called Linnea Airey has a well-supported progression of learning to read. So young children, the first thing they do start to learn to read are words in context, like stop, exit. But then in teaching the alphabetic code, they go through sounding out and eventually being able to recognise words automatically. So it perfectly fits with the way children do learn to read. And if they're being taught synthetic phonics or how words work, like you said, Sarah, sounding out words, they are then equipped to be able to decode and learn new words. So, you know, once you're 15, you don't know the context of what you're reading. You have to be able to decide or decipher unknown words.
Mm. Like that house and horse anecdote that you were talking about before. And just to bring another voice into the conversation, Marion Muller is, she's got 30 years experience in primary education, with the past 4 years specialising in reading recovery, and works in the western suburbs of Melbourne. Good morning, Marion.
Good morning.
What do you think? Is it about a balanced approach to literacy, or should we be concentrating on phonics?
I believe very much in a very open, balanced approach. For me, reading has two main ingredients. One is the decoding, and the other is understanding or comprehension. And it's very complex. There are many elements within both of those areas. But it is a balanced approach. It's an immersion. It's also being very open for educators or whoever is helping that child develop their reading skills, is sitting back and really observing them, watching them, depicting their strengths, utilising, and then utilising those strengths to further develop the weaknesses. And it has to be an open, balanced approach, because there is no one-size-fits-all.
But what do you say to that?
Every reader is unique.
What do you say to that argument that if people are just looking at the pictures of a picture book and trying to guess what's happening, then they're not actually reading?
Well, to be honest, many parents, when I was working with the children, would almost use that and test their children. And I would actually be horrified, because that is a legitimate skill. And if that student is a visual learner, and even if there's so much meaning, reading is decoding for meaning, and pictures hold a lot of meaning. There may be meaning within that picture that is actually not even given in the print, but by studying and studying in the reading recovery, whenever we were introducing a book, we would always, as the teacher, give that child a pre-knowledge and say, well, this is what the book is about. And as we're flicking through the pages, giving them an idea of what this book is about, the intent was allowing them to have to spend time examining the pictures, building up a sense of meaning.
Well, look, And with kids with difficulties, learning difficulties, and we had a chat with someone who lives with dyslexia earlier, and they said it's a kind of a mix of approaches. You know, it's about balance as well. So have you taught kids with learning difficulties, and how did you go?
Yes. The approach that I was employed to utilise was the reading recovery approach. It was a specific program. It was very prescriptive. There was a format that needed to be followed. And it worked better for some children. That's why there is no one fixed recipe. It actually worked very well, and one of the things that I found was really interesting about that program was that the first 10 days of instruction were really built on, it was called roaming, and in that time we developed the relationship with that student, only working on what that child knows, and therefore their confidence was increased. Mm. Their trust with the educator was established.
And that's really important, Marion. Thank you for your perspective. Marion Muller has 30 years' experience in primary education, with the past 4 years specialising in reading recovery. And that was a program that you were taking part in as well, Sarah Johnston. But I saw you kind of visibly reacting to what Marion was saying there. Why was that?
I fully understand where Marion's coming from, and I have been there, and I have been the staunchest supporter of reading recovery. And I still think the structure of the program has benefits. I would now use different texts when I was using it, and I'd have a different approach to the 10 minutes of phonics, which is situated within the program. There's a couple of things I'd like to respond to. Marion mentioned the beauty in the pictures and how much extra meaning a child or any reader can take from the pictures. There's absolutely no denying that. With a systematic synthetic phonics approach, we decode the text first. We understand what the text is saying, and then we look deeply into that picture to see what other meaning we can make to support what's in the words. But we start by reading the words first so we actually understand what they say, because we can be very reader-driven and skew the meaning if we start with a picture. Then we expect the words to say something different, and often we'll read what we think they're going to say, which is what happens in the analytic approach. The kids say what they think the word's going to say, so they'll say horse instead of house because they've seen the horse in the picture.
Yep. Yeah, and so there is room for error there, but I guess if you're talking about decoding and comprehension, there's an argument there, and Marion was mounting that argument that, you know, looking at the pictures is quite important. Do you want to weigh in on that, Tony Seiler?
Yes, I do. Often when we're having this discussion, the examples are about young children learning to read. So if you're using pictures to give cues, you're encouraging the child to do that, to look at that and guess. Very soon, the books do not contain pictures. So by teaching them to accurately look at the letters to decipher the words, first of all, they're reading the words accurately, and they've got the skills to learn new words. In other words, reading to learn new vocabulary.
Yeah, yep. Well, fair enough. Look, thank you to both of you for spending so much time with us this morning. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks very much.
Tony Seiler is a speech therapist who did her PhD on effective interventions for kids who are struggling with their reading. And Sarah Johnston is a teacher at Guthridge Primary School in Sale and has come full circle after doing reading recovery and is now very much into systematic synthetic phonics. What about you? What's the best way to teach someone to read? So many texts here, and I apologise if I haven't got to them. I've run out of time today. But Jim from Richmond says, when learning to read, everyone is an expert as they learnt to read, a bit like everyone being a great teacher because they were a student. Is it possible that you can limit the callers to actual teachers instead of experts? Well, Jim, I reckon it is important to hear from lots of different people on this. Thank you. Also, I just got an email, actually, and this is the first time I've had to read an email. But it says, I feel lots of kids are pushed to read at school when they're not ready. This sets up a bad cycle of hating reading just because it's too hard. Not all kids are ready at 5 years old, and I think that's important. My oldest two kids read at age four without too much help, and my youngest daughter didn't read proficiently until she was eight. because we home educated, it didn't matter that she couldn't read well. After she got reading, she loved it and still loves reading, and she'll finish a novel every few days. So thank you. So that's the Conversation Hour for today. Thanks for listening. Have a good one.